Hi Medical Mums, this is Cheryl Chong. Welcome to today's episode of Medical Mums Chat. Today we will be chatting to Anita Van Dyke, rocket scientist, medical mum, and published author. Anita has published two books. Her first book, called Zero Waste Life, won the Gold Award at the International Nautilus Book Awards in 2019 in the category of Green Living and Sustainability. She has since published a second book called Zero Waste Family in 2020. We welcome Anita to the show, and she will be chatting to us about her books as well as how to maintain a sustainable life as a busy medical mum. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Sustainability has to be sustainable for you. We can make small changes that make a big cumulative difference in the long run. Firstly, do what you can. Start where you are.
Good morning, medical mums, and welcome to today's episode of Medical Mums Chat. Today we have an exciting guest. We're talking to Anita Van Dyke. So let's welcome Anita to today's podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be on the Medical Mums podcast. I've been a huge fangirl of the Facebook page for a long time. I am a medical mum. I'm currently a junior doctor in Australia. And prior to this, though, I was an aerospace engineer for about seven years, and I climbed my way up the corporate ladder, and I realized that there was more to life than just, you know, climbing this corporate ladder. So that's why I came back to study medicine. It was a huge journey for me, which I can go into a bit more later on. During that time, during medical school, I needed a creative outlet. And for me, I started getting into sustainability. So that's where my passion for sustainability began. And I started my Instagram page, rocket_science, to talk about zero waste living. And since then, I've published two books with Penguin Random House called A Zero Waste Life and A Zero Waste Family. And that brings us to today.
You know, when you think about all the issues surrounding climate change and the rapid decline of the Earth and the sixth mass extinction and the fact that, you know, we don't think we're going to hit our 2 degrees of warming and, you know, we might even hit 4 in about 30 to 50 years. It's all quite scary, isn't it?
It's super scary. And that's why I started my Instagram account and wrote the two books, because I felt like these issues were overwhelming, especially for us busy mums. We barely have time to think about our own self-care needs, let alone caring for the needs of the planet. But what I want to show to you is that we can make small changes that make a big cumulative difference in the long run. So for me, it started by reducing my waste in the home, and then it expanded to understanding what climate change really was. And then now it's becoming an advocate for climate change policies. So these small changes making big cumulative difference over the long run is how I want to show that everyday Australians can make a change in their own lives.
Certainly, I think that that's very important because, you know, I was a big climate change advocate and, you know, living quite a minimal waste life. And then I had kids and then everything just blew up. Nappies, waste of food, plastic. There's so much plastic when you have children. So I think having some really good small steps, you know, if you're going to talk about it, to sort of say how a busy, you know, medical mum can get around these things and contribute to sustainability.
Yeah, so my book, A Zero Waste Family, exactly tackles that because I felt really overwhelmed. I was still a medical student at the time when I had my daughter, and I was juggling my Instagram and writing my book. And this sense of overwhelm is what we really feel as parents. You know, we're juggling too much, and not only that we're juggling too much, but the overwhelm that we feel of these big issues such as climate change can feel also time consuming and overwhelming. And so what I want to say is, firstly, sustainability has to be sustainable for you. This is a really important quote that I talk about in my book, because let's be honest, if you can't keep up the routines and habits that you want to do to minimize your waste, to reduce your carbon footprint in the long run, how can you sustain that for yourself and your family? So for me, I have some quick tips. Firstly, do what you can. Start where you are. So instead of beating yourself up and thinking, oh, this is too hard, or I don't have time for this, just start where you are. Start with something that you can do today. That might mean, instead of buying plastic drink bottles to take, you know, drink, you know, water or your soft drink out of, take your own drinks with your stainless steel bottle or your reusable coffee cup. You know, that's a simple switch that everyone can make today. And the cumulative difference of which can make a difference over a lifetime. And I think you can agree there too.
Oh, absolutely. Because I think what I found quite interesting on your Instagram was your budget versus investment story.
Yeah. So budget versus investment is, it started with understanding that the most sustainable option is to use what you already have. So that means using up the glass jars that you may have thrown out to recycling. A glass jar can be used for so many things. It can be used to store nuts and snacks for your children. It can be used as a water vessel, so drinking, using it as a cup. It can be used to store your leftovers when you go out and have, you know, your lunch or dinner. It can be used to store plants. It can be used to store so many things. So don't throw away your glass jars. Reuse them and start where you are.
Look, I agree with that. I'm actually currently storing all my breast milk in glass jars.
Oh, amazing. That's what I did too. And you know what? You can also start storing your kids' snacks and food in there as well, and you can freeze them. So glass jars are really really good freezing options, and you can label them just with a bit of, you know, glass whiteboard marker or a bit of masking tape.
What other things, you know, do you think that's quite easy to do? So what about sort of recycling? Because I find that quite overwhelming at times, because I don't think recycling logos are all very clear in a lot of the packaging that we buy. How do you sit around that? Because it takes a lot of time to sit there and read, you know, the numbers, because it's all numbered like 1 to 7, and you sit there and go, can I or can I not actually recycle this?
An easy rule I like to say is, if it has a triangle with a 1 and a 2, you can generally recycle those. So about 85% to about 60% of 1 and 2, it's a thick quality plastic, can be recycled. Anything less than a 2 is downcycled. So what that means is all plastic is downcycled, let's be honest. It's not recycled. So downcycling means that it's downcycled to poorer forms of plastic, so it gets thinner and thinner and poorer quality until it can't be downcycled any further and it sits in landfill. So anything that has a 3, 4, or a 5 virtually means that there's not much life left to them. So they're just going to sit in landfill and not be recycled properly. So what I always say is, recycling is not the solution. The solution is to think about your ins and your outs. So to reduce your waste, you have to reduce the waste coming in, and then that way you can reduce the waste that you're throwing out. So an easy way to do that is, instead of buying packaged goods, is to buy package-free goods. So choosing the naked option, shopping at the outer aisles of the supermarket, going to farmers markets, or getting an organic grocery box delivered to you without any plastic packaging. You can also go to bulk stores. There's many of them around. And the great thing about bulk stores is you don't have to live near one to actually shop at one, because you can just go there once a month, because they're all dry goods with a long shelf life.
Yes, buy a big amount of stuff.
Exactly. Buy a big amount of stuff and then do it once a month, or even get it delivered. A lot of the bulk stores now get it delivered in paper packaging as well, and in cardboard packaging. And so in reducing what you come in, then you can actually throw less things out.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. Now, what are your thoughts on greenwashing? Like, you know, biodegradability. Everyone is selling things that are that they say is biodegradable, especially nappies and nappy wipes.
Yeah, so biodegradable is, as it just says, biodegradable, but everything is biodegradable if you think about it, right? But how long does it take to biodegrade? Let's read the fine print. If it's compostable and home compostable, that is always the best option, because that means you literally can throw in your compost in the backyard and it will compost away into, you know, back into nature. Biodegradable just means that it'll go into small and smaller pieces eventually. So who knows how long that could take? It could take 6 months, or it could take 400 years, because all things are biodegradable. It just depends on how long and the process by which it biodegrades.
And what it actually biodegrades into, I suppose, because some of them still biodegrade into microplastics, isn't it?
Exactly. So we have to read between the lines, and we have to understand the fine print and really understand what these terms are. So I recommend, instead of looking at biodegradable or the eco-friendly option, actually just do some research and have a quick Google before you buy the product. If it says compostable and home compostable, then that's the best option.
Now, the other thing that you have going currently is Declutter April.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so Declutter April stems from this huge trend that we're seeing for minimalism and Marie Kondo. But the problem with those decluttering kind of books and theories is that they talk about throwing it away, but they don't talk about where the away is. Because let's be honest, when we throw things away, there's no such thing as away. It goes somewhere, and inevitably it ends up in landfill. So Declutter April is the antithesis to that. It's about reducing what comes into your home, decluttering, but then actually responsibly donating or sending it to somewhere that actually needs it. So for me, there's so many different options out there. But when you declutter your home, I highly recommend not just throwing it to or sending it to charity shops or op shops, but considering other options such as refugees, such as Aboriginal health communities, such as Dress for Success, so women helping women campaigns. Linen can be taken to your local vet and they can use old towels, bedding such as that for animals. It can also be taken to, if you have old clothing, it could be taken to textile recycling as well, such as, you know, local H&M or Zara stores, or just Google textile recycling near you. It's really important, especially if, you know, you have things that can't be donated, to send it back into textile recycling so it doesn't end up in landfill.
Because I think apparel do them as well. They even recycle shoes, I think.
Yeah, so there's so many different options. I think the easiest one is just to Google it, what's near you and what's really accessible to you.
The next thing I want to talk about is tackling food waste.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that?
So food waste is a huge pet peeve of mine. So I come from an immigrant family. So I originally was born in China, came over when I was 4. And for me, food waste is the ultimate kind of taboo for me, because we came from a home where we didn't have a lot of food. And now I've come into the opposite end of the spectrum, where we have an abundant and excessive amount of food that we can afford to waste it. So Australians throw away 1/3 of what they buy on a weekly basis into landfill. How atrocious is that? 1/3.
That's a very scary thought, though. And I think having young toddlers too, I find that I reckon that doubles. It's probably even half, because they don't eat stuff for you know, they throw things on the ground and you can't really eat it again. And it's really sad, actually. But, you know, how do you tackle things like that?
Yeah, so one option I would say is firstly, shop your pantry. So before you go out and do your weekly shop, look at what you actually have in your pantry. Do you have cans of beans that are sitting at the back that you need to use up? Do you have packets of rice that need to be eaten up? Do you have leftover pasta? Shop your pantry and make meals based on what you already have. So buy ingredients to supplement what you have rather than just buying out new curries or new products just because you feel like it's shiny, bright and new. So shop your pantry. That's the first tip. My second tip is create an eat me first box in your fridge. So we always have like a lonely banana or a half-eaten avocado. Put that in a box, label it eat me first so that everyone in your family can see it and use those ingredients up. And thirdly,
that's actually a really clever idea. I've never thought about that.
Yeah, I share that on my Instagram, and every time I put it up, people love it because it's just such an easy tip, but it will save you hundreds of dollars in a year because you're eating all your food. Another third tip is, and this is a great tip from my parents, is eat all your bits. So on a Friday night, before you do your Saturday shop or whenever you do it, eat up all your bits. So gather all the things from your Eat Me First box, the bits of eggs or like leftovers or whatever it is, and make a curry or make a stir fry or make fried rice from these products so that you're eating up all your bits and you're not wasting any food before you go out and do your shop.
Now, the other thing I have quite an interest in is fashion. So understandably, fast fashion, I think, is now the third biggest polluter in the world. What is your take on a lot of these new fail companies that are springing up touting sustainable, ethical fashion? So they're saying it's still good to buy because we're sustainable and ethical. Because buying secondhand these days, I love it. I think 80% of my wardrobe is now secondhand. But whenever you try and sell something, though, it's really, really difficult. Nobody wants to buy secondhand anymore.
Oh, I think that the wave is turning. I don't think that sustainability or secondhand fashion is becoming taboo. In fact, secondhand fashion or the circular economy is the biggest growing economy in fashion at the moment. So people are actually really loving buying secondhand because, let's be honest, it's better for the planet and it's better for your wallet because you're buying really good quality goods, especially designer goods, at a lower price point. So it's actually the fastest growing economy. I haven't bought anything new except for underwear, socks and swimwear for about 7 years now.
Is amazing.
Yeah, and for me, it's the best way to reduce your carbon footprint. So both my parents worked in fashion. They worked for large Australian fashion companies. And I know firsthand the impact of the rag trade because I've seen it on my parents. So the rag trade itself is very time consuming in terms of resources and also in terms of labor. So most of the products we see in fast fashion is literally made by blood, sweat and tears by someone who are like my mother, an immigrant woman or a woman of color who makes these clothings for us Westerners in this Western world so that you can buy a $10 t-shirt and wear it once or twice. So if you think about it like that, you have to think that it is the most unsustainable industry in the world where vanity is purely bred by greed and also at the cost of what? At the cost of the planet and at the human cost. So people like my mum who, you know, want to raise their children and look after their children, putting their blood and sweat and tears to make your $10 t-shirt. So we really have to think about the cost of this. So fast fashion for me is a big no, but I do have to say that sustainable fashion or slow fashion is a new emerging industry that we should support and that we should engage the conversation in.
I think we do forget the human cost that goes behind a lot of the $5 and $10 pieces that we buy. And I think hearing it from your perspective in terms of having parents that have gone through this certainly is something to think about. I think it drives home, like I said, the human cost of fast fashion, I suppose.
Yeah, so for us, you know, women and, you know, parents alike, we do want to look stylish for work, for our everyday lives. We want to look presentable, but it doesn't have to be at the cost of another human being. We as doctors know firsthand and have seen injuries of what it means to have workplace accidents. So, and this is in Australia where it's heavily regulated and the people get fair wages. So if you can imagine what it would be like to work in really poor working conditions, where the buildings are unstable, you don't have any sick leave and you work for maybe, you know, 50 cents an hour to produce a garment that you only wear once or twice because it's cheap and then you throw it away. I mean, that's the world turned upside down in terms of economy, isn't it? That we value these things so little that we can throw it away and they cost often less than a cup of coffee.
That's very, very true. And I think we do oftentimes forget, because it's just so easy to go into places like Big W and buy a $5 t-shirt when you have a screaming child with you and you just want to get it over and done with.
Yeah.
And
I totally understand.
It's certainly
that.
Hard to reconcile, yeah.
I certainly understand that we're all busy. I'm a mum myself and we're all busy. But there are so many great options out there now. So one thing I would recommend is firstly trying eBay. eBay is something you can do quickly at home when you have a spare moment, and you can often buy bulk, you know, bulk clothing. So you can choose, you know, 5-year-old boys, and you do that eBay search and you might find 20 garments that someone else is sending out in bulk, and that you can buy those 20 garments for $20 or $30 plus shipping, and that's it. Your season's sorted for your 5-year-old.
Yeah, true.
For us ourselves, we can go to markets on the weekend, enjoy it as an outdoor activity with your family, and buy the lovely jumpers and coats and jackets that we need for the season, and buying secondhand and also enjoying a lovely experience with our family.
True.
And we can also embrace concepts such as capsule wardrobes. So put together a Pinterest board of your favorite looks and buy, say, 20 garments for the whole season, and use that opportunity to try things such as op shops, thrift stores, Facebook Marketplace, or even do a swap with family and friends to see how you can put together a capsule wardrobe.
There's actually been quite a lot of talk recently about getting stylists in to simplify wardrobes and getting capsule wardrobes done, which I think it's good, because it's all catching on that living a life of excess is not always the best, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm really glad that it's engaging in the community of medical mums, because I think that we have to be mindful of our resources as well. Like, we spend so much of our time away from our children to work at these very hard careers to earn the money that, you know, we work hard for, and then we buy things that sit in the wardrobe that we don't use or don't really suit us. And so we really need to refine our style, and then that way we can save money, save resources, and save the planet.
So this is a bit of a political question. It's the push by the government towards a fossil fuel-led recovery post-COVID. Now, we all know that Australia certainly is not doing great when you look at our Kyoto Protocol and borrowing credits to look like we're doing good, but we're not actually. And now with this new push towards a fossil fuel recovery, that's only going to add to the burden of global warming and climate change. How do you think, as a medical mum, we can contribute to improve sort of not using fossil fuels, I suppose, to be more sustainable?
There's two ways, and I think I'm percolating a third book about this whole concept about reducing our carbon footprint in our everyday lives. The first way is to vote. So vote. We in Australia are lucky to be in a democratic country where our vote actually matters, and it's also compulsory for us to vote. So in the next election, vote. Vote with what your values and your ethics truly lie, not just with your hip pocket, but consider the pockets of your generations after you. So it's not just thinking about the immediate kind of financial ramifications that you experience, but think about the long-term costs of the impact to your family, your friends, your children, your children's children. That's really important. So vote. The second option is to also vote with your dollar. So that means you can exercise your democratic rights by switching out of companies that use fossil fuels. There are so many energy providers out there that provide sustainable, renewable energy sources that don't cost any more than just normal kind of fossil fuel consumption. If you're in the fortunate position of being able to put solar panels on your roof or other renewable systems, do so. The long-term costs will even itself out, and it'll be an investment for you and your family in the future. And finally, I would say if you don't have any of those options, just start small. So just start where you are. Educate yourself by looking at a Netflix documentary and getting your children to watch a David Attenborough documentary about climate change. Bring that conversation to the dinner table to not only educate yourself about the issues that truly matter, but also bring that next generation to the fore of being climate warriors and getting them excited about what they can do as well.
How do you think kids can contribute to living a sustainable life?
I think we got to lead by example, and the biggest example that they see is what you do in your everyday life. So if you talk about, hey, let's bring our drink bottles when we're out and about, create a zero waste kit. So that could be a cloth napkin, a reusable cutlery, a reusable straw, and also a reusable drink bottle. Put that in their backpack when you're out and about and use it. Show them, lead by example, that there's viable alternatives to single use plastics. That's a really great option. Second option is to, like I said before, engage them in the conversation. So make age-appropriate documentaries or YouTube videos, or even take them out into nature for excursions to the local beach, or taking them out for bushwalks to see what they're really fighting for and why nature is so important. And they're all free options too as well. So it's a great family opportunity for you to engage, to be together as a family and do something that's good for you and get outdoors.
What YouTube videos do you know of you know, show your own kid in regards to being sustainable?
Yeah, so there's a great series on ABC called Dirt Girl. And that's about, Dirt Girl. And it's a great series on about plants, gardening and wildlife. And it's really interesting and engaging for children. For older children, David Attenborough documentaries are really, really great just to show you the magnificence of animal life. And for teenagers, War on Waste series on ABC is a great reflection point for everyone in the family to show you the impact of waste. So those are really good options for different stages of, you know, growing up.
With your books that you've written two, and certainly going on to a third, you said?
Well, hopefully, we'll see if time permits.
One of your books won a National Writing Award. Was that right?
It's an international Nautilus Award, and it won gold in the sustainability section. So it's an international award. I'm pretty chuffed about it. But mainly it's just a reflection of, you know, that this book and the message is being spread across, that zero waste living is more than just about reducing your resources, but it's about reducing your waste in time, energy, and most importantly, you know, your planet's resources.
I think you're certainly a prime example that it can be done with a little bit of effort.
Yeah, I think that's what a zero waste life is, a 30-day guide, and also a zero waste family is a 30-day guide, because I chose the 30 days because research has shown it takes on average about 30 days to change a habit. So it just shows you that in 30 days, if you can reduce your family's waste by up to 80%, anyone can do it, and the cumulative ripple effect of which is you know, 10 magnitude. So if you think about it, if you, your one family can reduce 80% and then you encourage others to do so, imagine if all families in Australia could reduce their waste by 80%. And a 30-day kind of commitment is not hard for us to do, especially each of the tasks in the 30 days is small. It's not about making big drastic changes that won't be sustainable in the long run. It's about making small changes that the cumulative effect of which makes a big difference.
In this time and age when everyone's busy and there's so many things going on, a very easy 30-day guide is so doable.
Yeah, thank you so much. I totally agree. And that's why I created both those books, because we're all busy, let's be honest. All the recipes in both those books are 5 ingredients or less, because I want to make it so that you can pull ingredients from your pantry and make cleaning products. You can pull ingredients from your pantry and make beauty products, because we're all busy. I want to make all these recipes super accessible so that it takes less time for you to make the product than it does for you to go out to the shops, buy it and bring it back.
So what is your favorite cleaning product that you use? I've been, you know, buying, again, you know, that word buying, things like dirt and zero-co products, thinking, well, you know, they're Australian made and they're sustainable, but is there a better option to do it yourself at home?
Yeah, there's so many options, but my secret product for almost everything, it's the jack of all trades, is Castile soap. Castile soap you can get from the bulk store, and it costs about $10 a bottle that you can refill, and you can use it to make body soap, hand soap. You can make it to be an all-purpose cleaner. You can make it a floor cleaner. It for everything. Seriously, I use Castile soap with different dilutions for different purposes. The recipes, you can just quickly do a Google search for almost everything. So that one product is not only gentle for yourself, but it's also gentle for your family who may have, you know, young kids have sensitive skins. And also it's gentle to the planet because it's a natural product as well.
It's olive oil based or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's olive oil based soap, and it's it doesn't have lots of additives to make it, you know, foaming and you know has fragrances.
Yeah, like the sulfates and
the sulfates and the fragrances. So you can get it absolutely scent free, and you can also get it with, you know, no additives, and then you can just add your own to make it a product that you like. So you can add some essential oils, you can dilute it different accordingly with water, so you can make it a hand soap. There's so many different options for it. Seriously, it's the jack of all trades.
So what was the timeline like with the release of your third book then? How long did it take you to write the first two?
Oh, it took years. So the first book took about 1 year, and then I took a year off, and then I wrote the second book. And, yeah, if I do write a third book, it'll probably take another year or so. But mostly I use it as a creative outlet. I write daily posts, almost daily posts, on my Instagram page, which now has almost 100,000 followers, because it's a creative outlet for me. Rather than just talking about medicine all day long, this is another passion hobby of mine, and I think in the future I would really like to see the medical community talk about not only their home waste but also medical waste and how we can engage and turn the page on that as well.
Look, I think that certainly is changing. I think a lot of hospitals, mine included, I work as part of Ramsey Health, they are setting up sustainability committees. And in the emergency department where I'm in, they actually have a company, I think they're called Baxter, where they take all our PVC and plastic tubing and masks and things like that off for recycling, which is actually quite good. And yeah. I think some hospitals are also now doing metal recycling.
And kudos to them.
Surgical. Yeah. So I think it's slow. The tide is slowly changing. But, you know, I think it is hard because we're so used to the hard and fast convenience of living in the 21st century that trying to slow down and having to think about long-reaching consequences of sustainability is not always in the forefront of your mind, I suppose.
Yeah, it's tough to juggle, but we do have to balance our limited resources. So when you talk about plastic, you have to remind yourself it's made from petroleum, which is a non-renewable resource. So, you know, I'm not anti-plastic. I'm a former engineer, so we need plastic because it's lightweight, durable, and long-lasting. But we need to use it for things that really need it rather than wasting it on, you know, packaging for a banana.
Shopping bags.
Shopping bags, things like that. So we just got to be mindful of how we use it because it's not going to always be there. Petroleum is going to run out. As I talked about before, plastic is not recycled. It's downcycled. So it gets to poorer and poorer forms of plastic until it can't be recycled any further.
That's interesting because I've never heard that term before. So it's actually good to know. I want to know a little bit about your life before you became a doctor.
Yeah, so I'll talk about I was a rocket scientist, literally. I did a Bachelor of Aeronautical Space Engineering at the University of Sydney. I worked for some big corporate companies in terms of aviation, engineering consultancy, and I was really climbing the corporate ladder, as we all are in our 20s, trying to find success in all the usual places. And to me, success looked like buying the latest handbag, living in a large home, buying fancy shoes and a fancy car. And I was climbing the corporate ladder and I was pretty successful. But at the age of 27, I had kind of an aha moment, as Oprah would say. And this aha moment was when I was in a board meeting on level 6. I remember it very clearly. And there was my boss, my big boss, and the big, big boss. And I looked at all three of them and I thought, do I want to be these people in 5, 10, 15 years' time? And the resounding answer was no. And in kind of that kind of existential crisis where I went, oh, gosh, I've been climbing the corporate ladder, but maybe the ladder was leaning up against the wrong wall, it really made me reflect on what I want to do and who I wanted to be. And I guess that's where my environmentalism journey began, because it was out of necessity. I quit my job. I took some time off to do some self-reflection. So it went from 2 incomes to 1 income. And that's when my environmentalism journey began, because I had to work within my means and have reduced resources in terms of monetary resources.
Was there anything in particular that led to that epiphany, or did it just hit you in the head all of a sudden?
I think it was a gradual understanding that maybe I was in an industry that I felt like I was, you know, a square peg in a round hole that I didn't necessarily fit. But looking back, I think it was just a journey of trying to find myself, as we all are in our 20s, trying to find out who we are, what it means to be living a life of service and contributing into a meaningful life. All those questions that really come about as we grow older really, really hit me at that point in time. And I'm still trying to figure all those things out, let's be honest. Like being a junior doctor, I'm still trying to figure out those things. And I don't think necessarily I'm going to go down the traditional career path of being a specialist or doing all that training. I might be combining engineering and medicine in some way. And I think that that's exciting. I think for me, it's a recognition that I don't necessarily have to tread the path that's well-worn. I can do a new path for myself, which is kind of scary, but also at the same time, I have to be true to my identity and what I want in the world.
Mm. Well, I mean, certainly I think medicine, things like medicine and law, and even to a point engineering, they're kind of degrees that, and even art, for example, opens up a whole heap of doors. And I don't think there is a one-size-fit-all story for everyone.
Yeah, I think it's hard though. In medicine, there's a real hierarchy. And I think that especially as a junior doctor, there's a paved way that people go. And when you deviate from that kind of well-worn path, there is a bit of, you know, oh, what am I doing? I'm not doing what everyone else is doing. So I'm still trying to reconcile with that and see what the path will lead to.
Well, we wish you luck on your journey. You know, I think you sound like you know what you want, and you've certainly been there and done that. It's just about forging a new future for yourself that you're happy with, you know, because I think that's most important at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think also as medical mums, we all try to have that kind of questioning where we juggle so much, we juggle so many different roles that we do all have to find our own path in our own way.
Correct, very correct. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Anita. I loved hearing about the environment and sustainability. It's a pet love of mine. So thank you very much for volunteering to have a chat to us about it. Now, can you tell us where we can get your books from?
Yeah, so A Zero Waste Life and A Zero Waste Family can be found in most good bookstores, but you can just look online such as Booktopia or Book Depository. And, yeah, hopefully I will see some of my medical mums with the book, and hopefully it will change them in terms of the way they think about sustainability. So thank you.
You're very welcome. So have a good rest of the day, what's left of it, I suppose, and look, hopefully some of us will have taken away something useful, even if it's just one small thing in terms of changing our lifestyle, like you said, one small step at a time. And we hope everyone gets a chance to read the book.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. We'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
That concludes today's episode of Medical Mums Chat. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have a story to tell, please get in touch. And in the meantime, look after each other and yourself. And we'll see you on the next episode of Medical Mums Chat.